You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph, 250 watts of community power.
CFRU
And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz enjoying that very original warm-up. Adam there was like the Meow Mix theme or something.
It was kind of riffing off our theme music. It's
meow,
we've been
meow.
Playing it for almost 3 years.
If
so.
Cats... It is, isn't it? Holy cow. We'll have to have an anniversary party.
With all the staff.
What a turnout, all two of us. What a crowd.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast, and this part is different, on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
iTunes can make a lot of people happy there.
Yes.
Sweet. Good job.
Thank you. It was really nothing. It was like adding a link and then it's there. So today we are going to talk about Joe Arpaio, the controversial former Arizona sheriff that Donald Trump decided needed to be pardoned immediately, even before he was sentenced for contempt of court charges. So we'll talk about Arpaio's own contempt for anyone the colored brown and Trump's contempt for the rule of law to please his base. Then more locally, we were going to have Guelph Transit GM Mike Spicer with us via phone, and we'll get into that when we get him on phone, why he's on the phone and not here in person. It is an important reason, and we will address that. But we're also going to talk about the changes coming to the bus system as of this weekend, September 3rd. There will be new schedules, new routes, new possibilities. If you have a question, it's not too late to send it in. If you want to tweet me at Adam A. Donaldson with a question, and I will answer it when we get Mike Spicer on the phone, please do that. But first, Justin Trudeau, our very awesome Prime Minister, his PR people want you to believe.
there was a twist there.
Our ubiquitous Prime Minister, let's say.
Yes, very much so.
Almost halfway through his mandate, so what a better time to give the cabinet a slight shuffle. I think the way it was kind of sold on Monday with like the news, like, there's going to be a cabinet shuffle. I thought it was going to be huge. It was going to be like shuffle half the cabinet, but it was like six people. So, Scotty, I think the most interesting thing out of it was that we have now not just one, but two Indigenous-related cabinet positions.
Yes, a shared portfolio by two MDs. Very, very interesting divide. I don't know if there's really that much commentary on what will this achieve. I think a lot of the question that came out of it was, what will it achieve? So the divide is now Carolyn Bennett is the head of Crown Indigenous Relationship. The Crown Indigenous Relationship in Northern Affairs, Jane Philpott for Indigenous Services. So it sounds like one is pretty much the, I was going to say PR, but not exactly, let's call it the negotiation department.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Jane Philpott is going to take care of services, which is everything else. How they're going to divide that, I don't know. Somebody had put out, not a Venn diagram, but a chart of how Indian Affairs works and its relationship to the cabinet and the government. And then Indian Affairs, and then these departments within that, and where the money goes, and the band. And I was like, that alone is confusing. So now there's another layer of bureaucracy in there, and as to whether they're going to have to create a completely separate department to administer it, or they're going to use existing resources. That wasn't really clear. I thought Susan Delacourt's comment in iPolitics was interesting, that she had said that usually with a cabinet shuffle, it's an effort to repair something. Mm-hmm. There's something, as we saw in January with the shuffle when, oh boy, I completely dropped what I was going to say.
You mean Miriam Monsef?
Not Monsef, the shuffle into trade was...
Oh, right, Christopher Freeland. Christopher Freeland,
yes.
Yeah.
Getting rid of some Stefan Dion. Wow, I blanked on that. Is that long? It's only six, 7 months, and I'm like, ooh, Stefan Dion.
How soon we forget.
That was a change. And actually, she had something added onto her portfolio, but we'll, I guess we'll talk about that in a minute. So yeah, the it remains to be seen as to whether this new division in Indigenous Affairs will accomplish anything. The idea is they have two very capable people, both who happen to be MDs. I don't know if that's intentional. I know Carolyn Bennett's been on the Indigenous portfolio for years. Jane Philippot, a bit of a change for her, but it's a sign that she's an up and comer. It's a very, they put so much importance on this portfolio that that's a move into the upper echelon, I think.
Well, it's an interesting move because Philpott is has been seen as a successful minister because she, you know, was involved in negotiating that health agreement that everyone was against. And then slowly but surely, every single one of the provinces signed
province
on.
Province by province, we will sign this agreement.
Yeah,
yes.
It felt like dominoes. So, you know, yes. She's looking like a badass right now as someone who can get stuff done, even when it seems impossible, even when, you know, other various levels of government are screaming at her and, you know, and saying we're going to refuse to sign on to this, and then everybody signs on. So she's someone who can, who's clearly someone who can get things done. So it's interesting that, yeah, she becomes head of the service end of this, which I actually had to dig to find, like, the breakdown you were talking about. Yeah. So if you were just watching the news, you're like, Carolyn Bennett's doing this, and James Philpott's doing that, and this person's doing this. And it's just like, how about telling us what the difference... This is the kind of thing that bothers me about mainstream fake news. I'm just kidding about the last part. But
fakeish news?
but no, it's not fake news, but the mainstream news and the TV news, it's like they don't, you know, they don't bother to give you details about things. They just tell you who's up and who's down, and
this is happening. We don't know why.
So yeah, on the service side, you're talking about overseeing welfare, education, child and family services, housing, the water advisories, health care, and then Bennett's new position, which is the Crown Indigenous Relations. You're talking about land disputes, and there are apparently over 100 different land disputes like in the legal pipeline and like in various degrees of making their way through. So it seems to make sense to put someone on that and say, you know what, yeah, there's like the immediate issues of like reservations that have boiled water advisories for months on end, and then on the other hand you have these long term. So it seems like short term and long term is the separation of powers, and it makes sense to me. Apparently this was a suggestion made like 20 years ago for the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples, which I hadn't heard of, but I mean, it was 20 years ago, and a lot happens in 20 years. But
it's one of those reports that just ends up gathering dust. They've somehow resurrected an element of it.
But apparently, this was what was this was a recommendation in it that there should be a split along these
only
lines.
Only 20 years, eh? Wow.
Well,
record time,
10 of those
probably.
Years was Stephen Harper, who couldn't be bothered to work on the Indigenous file at all.
Not going
to
happen.
To address the other changes, too, Ken Hur, who was Veterans Affairs, he's now the Minister of Sport and Disabled Persons, who the perception is that's kind of a dumb motion, which has a lot of people speculating about whether or not this is Trudeau sort of like realizing... four Alberta seats may be his limit.
Yes, and I think that was one of the comments that it was they're poorly represented in cabinet. And,
yeah,
and in general, actually.
And then on top of that, there was the Dinesh Kang, who is facing some serious sexual harassment allegations,
right.
He's another Alberta MP, Liberal MP. So you know that the Alberta part of the caucus isn't, you know, this was not a particularly good week for them. I hadn't heard of this woman, but she was the Parliamentary Secretary for Health, so now she's the full health minister, Jeanette Padipa Taylor.
Oh, she'd been semi-regular on Power and Politics.
And
I don't know if that there seems to be a pattern that people who are trotted out to do the rounds normally end up.
Yeah,
in the shift. So
sure. I mean, yeah. If you're a good talker, then yeah.
Yep.
Which is why Seamus O'Regan is now the Minister of Veterans Affairs.
One of the veterans of the Aga Khan tour, I think.
That's still under investigation. And
there.
Although, who cares?
I do.
He's
sober now, though. It's very good.
Sober. Yep. He's a Newfoundland MP, so a lot of people are seeing because Judy Foote, as we talked about last week with Marwan Tabara, has stepped down due to personal reasons. So Seamus is elevated for Newfoundland representation. So that seems to be like another political move to sort of bolster support from there. And then the final move is the speaking of Judy Foote as the new Minister of Public Services and Procurement, Carla Qualtro, who is someone who was the minister of sport, now is in this.
I thought she was completely fresh, I guess.
No, she's not that.
No.
Not to talk about people like they're fresh. But
no, you know what I mean? Not fresh, but fresh blood, I guess.
She's a fresh person.
For the team. Let's call her an unknown, but it sounds like, you know, she was minister of sports in the cabinet. But the cabinet's pretty huge these days, right?
Well, I think this was 32 now.
32. I had no idea there was a cabinet portfolio for LGBT issues.
I think that's like a parliamentary secretary.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's, what is his name again? I'm losing the names today. But anyway, I name dropped.
Because there are like many levels of sort of cabinet status. You have like the people who are like full cabinet. And you have like the
Randy
parliamentary secretary.
Bolsonaro. Oh, no, you're right. It isn't cabinet.
Yeah. But I mean, it's still gender parity. So he's still holding up that end.
So there's lots of boxes to tick, I
bully
guess.
Bully for JT.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like a reasonable shakeup. Like, it's like six people. So, you know, there's no sort of, I guess there's like, this doesn't have the feeling of sometimes when I see governments later on, like, kind of scrambling to just like freshen things up. Like, there was kind of a feeling of that last, I guess it was last fall or early winter when Kathleen Wynne shook up her cabinet.
Yes.
There was like a general feeling of like, we got to make a change because otherwise it's
shaking the tree.
Yeah. So that this does not have that feeling, but it.
No, because I think part of it too is the major players in the major portfolios, like I was saying about Chrystia Freeland. They've added trade officially, I think, to it. It's foreign affairs and trade now.
Right.
And also the stalwarts like Morneau and finance, Goodale, who's Minister of Public Safety. Also the guy who seems to put out the fires.
Yeah.
Like if it's really going down, they trot out Goodale because veteran, right? He knows exactly how to handle it. And Catherine McKenna in the environment portfolio. So there's still, you know, some of the players that were wasn't shaken.
Yeah, somebody, I think it was in the Globe and Mail, they were pointing out that there seems to be this feeling that we're going to like a micromanagement kind of deal with the Liberals that we sort of saw under Harper, where there was like a small subset of cabinet ministers for whom there was like the power.
Yeah.
And then you know, sort of everybody else. And it does feel like that with Goodale, Morneau, McKenna, Freeland. So that kind of wasn't the intention of the Trudeau cabinet coming up. It was kind of a, you know, it was going to be like, oh, it's going to be more like a board of directors. And with, you know, the prime minister's chair, it was going to be sort of more egalitarian, more voices, more management, you know, less hands on. But it seems it's kind of gone the opposite way on that, which I don't know if I mean, this, it almost feels a little inside baseball to put it this way. And I'm not sure how many people care that, you know, Bill Morneau has a lot of leeway. Versus, you know, somebody like Ken Hare or maybe Bartosz Czager. I'm not sure how many people are watching things that closely. But, it's sort of interesting to watch this play out. It will be interesting to see because going back to the Indigenous file, that's where the government's been pounded lately is because of the problems with the missing and murdered Indigenous women. Inquiry and the ongoing concerns with that, like approving pipelines despite clear protests by Indigenous groups and Indigenous bands.
You have to wonder if they're going to do that tag team routine where Bennett will be on and she'll say, well, that's actually Jane's portfolio, and you know, like that may happen. Obviously it hasn't happened yet, but I wouldn't say that it's unlikely to be like, well, that actually belongs to her and you'll have to ask her, which would be awful if that became, you know, the norm, I suppose. I guess we have to give them a little bit of time, but it's a very interesting division to make. If you have somebody like troops on the ground, let's say, and getting on these, you know, the issues that we talk about all the time, water quality, housing, like you said about missing and murdered Indigenous women, Philpott is going to have a lot on her plate. Not going to, she does. This is the second she was signed on and took the oath. It's game on. So
to address what you said, there was Christopher Alcantara, who studies Indigenous settler relations at Western. And he said that was kind of his concern with it. It was going to complicate decision making, and it was going to be, you're going to have like two ministers who are maybe competing for time and resources, two ministers who may be like trying to create their own little fiefdoms, you know, trying to protect themselves. If something looks good on that file, they may be competing to see who can take the credit. And if something looks bad, they may be competing to see who can take that credit too.
Yeah, you'd hope it doesn't come to that, but you never know.
Never know.
It depends on how it's, what the future is going to hold.
Never know.
Yes, we'll leave it at that. You never know.
And you never know what Donald Trump might do next.
Oh.
Here's an interesting thing that happened last Friday. Because there was a lot of stuff. I don't know. You can't really not watch TV news on Friday, because that seems to be when like stuff goes
when the
down.
Bomb hits.
Because there was a Hurricane Harvey, which slammed the Gulf Coast of the United States for the first time. It's since slammed it two more times. But the first hit, which from the actual Hurricane Harvey, happened on Friday night. And then in the midst of this, Donald Trump announces he's going to pardon this one of his bros, Sheriff Joe Arpaio. I should say former Sheriff Joe Arpaio, because he's not sheriff now. He was voted out of office.
Yeah, he's like president. You keep the title. Although, I think they still refer to him as it. But anyway.
Maybe. I don't know.
Comes the sheriff.
Given some of the stuff this guy was into, I'm not like, I think calling him sheriff after the fact is a bit like, you know, letting the Sheriff of Nottingham keep the title of sheriff after Robin Hood brought him down. I think this guy definitely would give notes to the Sheriff of Nottingham. But Joe Arpaio, you can probably dig up this guy's litany of offenses pretty easily, but he was tried and convicted of contempt of court because he was twice told by the courts, like, you can't racial profile Latino people and assume everyone who is of Latino origin or even just have like brown colored skin is an illegal immigrant, which is kind of what he was doing. And ProPublica, which is this crowdsourced investigative journalism site. It's got some really interesting stuff. I mean, it's not perfect, but it does have some interesting insights occasionally, and this was one of them. They sort of went over all his illegalities, shall we say. One of them was that he put preternatural focus on chasing illegal immigrants, including putting his men on detail in around farms to catch migrant workers, many of whom like have some kind of documentation, because there is some allowances for farms in Arizona, California, and in those places to bring in Mexican immigrants to work on the farms seasonally. Meanwhile, they were ignoring hundreds of sexual assault cases that were going on the shelf unsolved. The emergency response time of the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department was way up. If you called 911, you might have been waiting a while for the sheriff's deputy to show up because they're busy chasing illegal immigrants on farms outside of town. So this guy was a well and truly terrible person, and so naturally Donald Trump pardoned him for his crimes.
Yeah, I mean, the list goes on. It was police throughout his tenure, police misconduct, abuse of power, immigration law and election law violations, and as you said, racial profiling. They had supposedly have paid out $146 million in settlements of cases that have come against them. I'm saying them because I'm including the whole department. It wasn't just Sheriff
Joe. Well, it's against Maricopa County, so yes. It's not just, you know, Sheriff Joe isn't paying out $140 million in fines. It's tax... And actually... It was the reason he was voted out by 13%. So when Donald Trump gets up and says, "Oh, he barely lost," and it's like, "No, he lost
huge."
He got
pummeled, yes.
And it was because a lot of people in Maricopa County, which includes Phoenix, Arizona,
right,
were fed up like paying the legal bills, and paying out, you know, civil rights settlements because of him.
And not only that, there was a fantastic article in the, I think it was in the Washington Post, I believe, of somebody that was arrested and in the jail system in Maricopa County. And he said it was incredible. Like, he was staying in a tent at one point, and then all the food was only available from vending machines. There was no food service. The water was from a vending machine as well. And there was people, like, couldn't get anything because they didn't have any money. And the people that didn't have money were fed some sort of gruel. Like, it does sound like Sheriff of Nottingham grade caring for people. I mean, that's, you know, prisoner whatever. But there are, I guess, limited resources in that department, or they can limit the resources however they want. But that, you know, is that when that's meted out as a form of punishment as well, it's actually, and to some degree, it's a human rights violation, right? So I would say anyway, he wasn't charged with that. But his pardon, if I got it right, the pardon actually said in it that he was pardoned for that he protected them from the scourge of illegal immigration. It was actually worked right in there that it was like, this is something that he was doing.
Well, that's what Trump was saying in like statements. It's like, he was like obeying the laws and he was like keeping illegals out of here. And it's like, no, he was. It's like, okay, maybe he was. But the way he was doing it was terrible and
troubling and unusual, I believe, were described as.
Yeah. Like, and on top of that, the arrest rates were plummeting. So like they were stalking migrant workers and not arresting actual criminals.
Yep.
So, yeah, with this major city, Phoenix, and on the one hand, we're being told all the time that immigrants are, you know, illegal immigrants are coming into the country and committing all these crimes.
They took our jobs, yeah.
Meanwhile, arrest rates are plummeting in Maricopa County because, you know, they're sitting on farms to get all the apple pickers. Come on.
Yeah, and of course, and that also has the effect of, you know, less apple pickers means that's not getting done either. And it's like you're pretty much just harassing people by the sounds of it.
Well, there was a story on that a couple of weeks ago that there's farms in California and places where, you know, there's food kind of going bad on the vine because they don't have the labor to pick it. So it's largely because of these, not so much the policies,
crackdowns.
Because there hasn't been that change in policy, but the ice crackdowns, it's just the general attitude coming from the top that is sort of dissuading people from coming to the country.
So something else that happened, it's sort of related to this that I noticed in the files. It's come back, the transfer of military style equipment to police. It's been reinstated by Trump. It was canceled by Obama in 2014. So
right.
This is the reigniting, let's say, of the law and order portfolio, what was happening was that equipment was being delisted from the military. So they had a surplus of whatever, 10 vehicles or something, and say, hey, the Phoenix Police Department, we really could use one of those to chase people down, and they'll get it. But this isn't just regular police car. This is like the vehicles that Canada sold to Saudi Arabia grade.
Yeah, like military
assault
vehicles.
Like military style. So it's, you know, that is back.
Humvees and stuff.
And also, I mean, speaking of Mexico as well, in the middle of the what was going on with Hurricane Harvey, Trump was tweeting something about the wall. Like he was back. He jumps around so much, but he was talking about, you know, the wall and Mexico paying for it. And of course, Twitter explodes with the responses. But yeah, and speaking of the response, we want to talk about Harvey a bit because that was something else. I loved the photo of their with their hats on, 45 and FLOTUS. There's actually a FLOTUS hat you can get now.
So
it would seem that it's all about style now, the tour. It used to be like about sympathy, and here he is putting a sandbag on the wall, but this was like, wasn't it great? Look at how many people were here. And
it's not even about style.
Hundreds.
It's about selling the swag. Those hats were $40 each, too.
So, they're actually for sale.
You can go to his campaign website because, again, he's officially campaigning for re-election in 2020. He has a campaign website. He has
what?
A campaign office.
I didn't know his campaign. I thought it was just
he
swag.
Has signed the official campaign.
You can do that? It's that early, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
So
crap.
Trump 2020, Trump-Pence 2020 is up and running. And, of course, there have been allegations that they've been using those campaign funds to pay for lawyers for Don Jr. and other people involved in the the Mueller investigation. And, you can go to the Trump website and buy the USA 45 hat and the FLOTUS hat and... he's going out there. He's talking about, look at all this great crowd showing up. I was like, well, maybe you want to focus on the fact that a lot of these people have nowhere else to go because half the city, might as well rename it Atlantis at this point.
Yeah.
And then on the bigger news story, which I think is getting overshadowed, is the chemical plant that exploded.
Yes, that just happens.
It happened this morning. Because the coolant was offline because there's no power and the generator failed.
Fukushima style, yeah.
I don't know if it's Fukushima style,
but
it's...
the generators didn't work and then that was it.
Right.
I mean, it's not Fukushima grade, but it's the same thing.
It's
deluge.
A similar kind of disaster people are looking at where it's something is built to maybe too close to the sea given prevalent conditions of the area and disaster happens. And I think something like 20 police officers had to go to the hospital after being exposed to this stuff. But they don't know what this chemical plant makes, because the one rule that allowed people to find out, they had, you know, they were by the government made it so that you had to file with them a report about what chemicals you produce at your factories, and then anyone from the public can access, and I guess in the form of like some kind of access to information request. Mm-hmm. But then a couple of years ago, after a similar disaster in West Texas, Texas Governor Greg Abbott put the kibosh on that. So now they have no idea what's in this place. They do a teleconference yesterday with reporters, and reporters are like, "Hey, can we find out what chemicals are here?" "No, we're not going to do that." So you
know, it's all floating around the Gulf of Mexico with all that oil from BP. Yeah.
So it's, I mean, talk about, you know, you want to see an example of, you know, maybe where you need more government regulation. It's like maybe in the area of where there's dangerous chemicals that send people to hospitals and turns a already great disaster into a bigger disaster. And nobody's really talking about that. And then, you know, before I came here today, you know, Mike Pence is down in the Gulf and he's there with Abbott, and they're having like basically a prayer meeting. Press conference, and Greg Abbott says, "Oh, this Sunday we're going to have like a statewide day of prayer," and I'm like, "Okay, well that's great. That'll clean up your toxic chemical site."
And all this, I mean, this all just shows where they're coming from. I mean, you have to wonder where the money's coming from of the campaign. I don't know don't know for sure whether campaign money has come from these chemical companies, but there's usually a link. It doesn't take much to, this is just in my opinion, you just need to scratch a little bit and it's like, hey, well, we're going to self-regulate, we don't have to do anything because we funded, you know, Governor X and Senator so-and-so and whatnot. But
well, there's going to be a bigger disaster coming and they're trying to address the cleanup, because apparently there aren't a lot of building standards in Texas either. So you don't have to
freewheeling. So capitalist, pew pew.
Yeah, it's a regulation free for all. So as they're trying to do cleanup in this area, a lot of people are going to find themselves effed in the A. You know, we'll keep it clean because it's a 5 o'clock show. But it's crazy. But and then to bring this full circle to the whole Sheriff Joe Arpaio part, because there were a lot of people who assume it wasn't so much about Arpaio, although it was about Arpaio and about the base that loves Sheriff Joe Arpaio.
Yep.
But it was also a lot of people seeing it as a test run, because the Mueller investigation is going on, mm-hmm. and Donald Trump, of course, famously asked his staff if they could find out if he had the ability as president to pardon himself. So a lot of people are seeing this as a test run for maybe pardoning Manafort, maybe pardoning Don Jr., and, you know, maybe, I don't know, Santa Claus at some point.
I think the comment was made that that Trump may be impeachable over the Arpaio pardon. Simply because
he's unimpeachable on just about everything.
Yeah, so he may actually go down, because I think the way it worked legally was it contempt of court or the actual charges. That's something that you can't really pardon. I don't know. It's I think somebody is probably going after Z. Well, you know, can we impeach Trump over this?
Well, there was breaking news last night that Mueller's teaming up with the New York Attorney General about state charges. Maybe being brought against some people. And, of course, you can get a presidential pardon for federal charges, but not for state charges. So
can the governor pardon you? Or?
That's a good question that I don't know the answer to.
I think you can for...
That sounds right. I don't want to say
for sure.
But
maybe not for something like this.
But, yes, maybe. But, I mean, it goes to show you there's, like, some kind of chess match going on. And mm-hmm. I would never call Donald Trump a chess player, but, I mean, he seems to be testing the limits of his power, and that is definitely forcing people trying to hold him to account to test the limits of theirs as well.
And, of course, it was revealed right in the middle of everything going on with the hurricane. So it's are you trying to bury this? Or are you,
well, of course, maybe. The Arpaio thing, he comes out on Tuesday and says, well, I knew that the hurricane was going to get great ratings, so I knew everyone was going to see this.
It's all about the ratings.
It's crazy.
Holy
anyway,
moly.
I can't segue from ratings to the bus, but...
we rate this bus A+. No,
but we're going to get Mike Spicer on the phone, and we're going to talk about transit issues. I haven't checked my Twitter lately, but again, if you want to send me a question about the bus, you can tweet me at Adam A. Donaldson, and I will pick it up. And otherwise, we do have a lot of great questions ready to go. So we'll get Mike on the phone. You're listening to Open Source as well here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. Tilsonburg, my back still aches when I hear.
landed in a field that was long and wide, with one old horse and five more guys. I asked him where to find the cigarette trees. When he said, bend over, I was ready to leave. Tilsonburg.
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 My back still aches when I hear that word.
And there was Stompin' Tom Connors from his, I'm going to put in quotes, new album, but it's actually 50 years. 50 years of Stompin' Tom. There you go, this year. 50th anniversary of the late Stompin' Tom.
49 too many.
49.5. And that song was Tilsonburg, about picking tobacco down in Tilsonburg. I guess we'll put that one out on in honor of Labor Day.
Sure.
For the tobacco pickers, of which there aren't as many as there used to be.
We don't usually put that much thought into the music we put on, but sure.
Oh, you wouldn't. You have no idea. We're going to fight that one to the end of time. Until the last episode, we're going to be arguing about that one. Like, I do. I honestly think about music all the time.
Is that the station manager calling us?
It's like, what the heck?
I think we're officially canceled. Anyway, yep, Scotty's cell phone. So we're joined on the air by Guelph GM, Guelph Transit General Manager, Mike Spicer. Mike, you're there?
Yes, Adam, how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing well today. Thanks very much.
Good. I wanted to start because the reason you're not here in person is you are currently part of the negotiations with the ATU, the Amalgamated Transit Union, 1189, which are the Guelph Transit operators and drivers and employees. Can you talk a bit about sort of maybe where, I mean, I realize we're probably not going to get into details, but just in terms of, you know, the feeling of the negotiations, how they're progressing, you know, whether you feel good about a new contract maybe?
Well, I, you know what, you're right, Adam. I can't get into detail about it because at this point, all I can tell you is that both sides are doing their best to try and come up with a settlement that works for the City of Guelph and the Amalgamated Transit Union. Mm-hmm. And we are talking all the time, and we're being very creative in our discussions, and we are able to continue to talk. We've been talking for the last 4 days of this week, so we're almost ready to wrap up for today. We'll probably be done in about the next hour or two, but I will tell you that they're very respectful conversations, very fruitful conversations, and very, very active conversations. So things are, in my opinion, if we could say, going in a positive direction, I could absolutely agree with that.
Okay, well, we like the sound of that. Obviously, we wanted to have you on today because there is more immediate big changes coming up. So this Sunday, Guelph Transit is launching the new, I should say the revamped routes and schedules. It's not a complete teardown and rebuild. So I think we've kind of, between Guelph Politico, Guelph Today, Guelph Mercury, and Guelph Transit via Facebook and public engagement, all that, we've pretty much covered the reasons why this is happening. But in terms of the rollout, how are you feeling your department is ready for Sunday?
Well, you know, and I've been here in Guelph, Adam, for about the last almost 9 months now. And one of the things, and I believe you and I had the conversation just after I arrived, mm-hmm. is making sure that we try and do a good job in our communication and try and get the information out to as many people as we can and different avenues to do that. And so we really focused this time on trying to ensure that we could tackle as much of our customer base as possible and as much of the community as possible by doing some new types of things. So we put some signs up at bus stops that were no longer going to be bus stops, or bus stops that will be installed for the route realignment as one case. The other was we put a full ad into the local newspaper of what the routes look like. Our online presence and our social media presence has been, we've done some extraordinary stuff with that in order to do the reach out. So the thing that we're doing this week that is really helping, though, is we're hanging out at the University Center and at Guelph Central Station, and we're actually walking up to customers and asking, do you know about this? And here's the changes, and how can we help you? And we seem to be doing a lot of individually route planning with individuals to talk about how this will affect their travel patterns next week. So in some cases, People have already understood what they are, and they've done the homework themselves. But in other cases, we've been able to kind of help people understand what their route schedule will look like next week before next week hits.
Right.
And what I'm hoping we can do is minimize the number of people that on Tuesday will get out to a bus stop and then realize that things have changed. So there's been a lot of work from our team to get out and talk to people, provide the information, do the individual route maps. We had some public information centers where we wanted to do some one-on-one trip planning, which we were able to do. But we also spent some time going to some seniors facilities, some senior center, to make sure that we did as much outreach as we could to get the message out there so that when the changes happen, people aren't going to be surprised. And so we'll see that what that happens or what that's going to be like on Sunday from a Sunday service perspective. But I think the big key will be next week, and we are anticipating having our staff at Gulf Central Station and at the University Center to kind of help those people that may have just come to town if they're a university student or just came back from a summer vacation and haven't had the opportunity to see our social media or our online presence or anything in the newspaper. So we're trying to get ahead of this as much as we can. And again, we'll learn from this to understand if there's things that we can do better as we move on. So hopefully we've got most of the bases covered, but I would be naive to think that we have all the bases covered. But I'm pretty proud of the effort that my staff have done. It's been all hands on deck this week. I've got some staff that are putting in some extra hours, and then there's a group of us here at negotiations that haven't been able to help, but they've really stepped up. So I'm very proud of my staff and what they've been able to accomplish, and now we'll jump in and we will help out as well. So it's been quite an experience to go through from my perspective, being relatively new to Guelph Transit.
I have to say, Mike, I encountered the quite a few of the people in the high-vis vests out front of the University Center doing it the good old-fashioned way, handing out the sheet of paper, and I think a lot of people were very grateful for it. There was an entire busload, I think, of international students got off, and it's kind of like getting off the plane when you first come to Guelph. You're like, where the heck am I? I'm in front of the center. And someone was there, handed them all sheets of paper, and they said, did you have any questions? And they were all very receptive to it. So I would say that definitely is working. And I have my copy, too. So it's up on the fridge. Oh, yeah. Yeah, very, very effective, I think. So there's some feedback from a transit rider. Myself.
Very happy to hear that. Thank you for that.
Praise from Caesar. I do want to get to listener questions, and a couple of them do involve the new 99, which is the main line. Somebody asked about how the 99 was going to lay the groundwork for rapid transit.
So, again, we call it the 99 main line is going to lay the ground for higher order of transit. So I don't want to name it rapid transit or BRT. Mm-hmm. I like to just use the terminology higher order of transit at this point. But I do see this as a great opportunity for us to be able to have frequent transit service. And I'll just say along the Gordon Corridor as a start. But I see this as a great learning opportunity for us and also an opportunity for the community to embrace what it will look like. Mm-hmm. But I do see Guelph Transit in the future going to a more grid-type pattern on some of the higher corridors to move people north, south, east, west in a much more efficient and quicker manner. So the Gordon Street Corridor is to me the one that needs the priority first, because, again, I think we mentioned part of the realignment was done because we were leaving a number of individuals on the sidewalk and we didn't have enough buses along there, which, again, in the transit industry is always a good thing, but from a customer perspective, it's not a good thing. So we're hoping that this will allow us to prove to the community that a higher order transit line is very feasible in the city of Guelph, can work in the city of Guelph, and can be successful from the perspective of moving people as quickly as they can from the south end of the city to the north end of the city. So it's the start of looking at more of a grid type structure as we enhance our frequencies and enhance our routes as we grow.
Okay, I'm going to put the other 99 question aside for the minute, since you did say the keywords grid design, because somebody did ask about that, about what they asked a very lengthy question, so I'm going to rephrase it succinctly. But they were asking about why the city couldn't just move straight out to a grid design as opposed to continually having the majority of the routes, certainly not all the routes, but the majority of the routes having to stop downtown.
Well, again, Adam, just to get to the point, is that we needed to do a realignment, first of all, to balance our system and create a network that people could count on and rely on.
Mm-hmm.
And we think we've kind of done that from this perspective. And again, there's a service review that is coming on Guelph Transit later this fall. And so we wanted to make sure that we put our house in order to make sure that we're running as efficiently as we can now. Now, we did this change of this alignment without adding any additional monies to our budget. And so in order for us to move to a more grid type structure or network, we need additional resources to do that, which would require additional money, and that would be done through going to council at budget time.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't in that, wasn't prepared to be able to do that yet, because we still need to do the work. But I do think that within the next 2 to 3 years, we will start moving towards a more grid-type system and get away from the hub-and-spoke system that we have now, because not every bus needs to go through the downtown, and not every bus needs to go through the university center, but there are a significant number of buses that do need to go into the downtown and do go into the university center. But we need to understand more of the travel patterns of the community and where people are getting on the bus, where they're getting off the bus. And we've got that data available to us now with our automatic passenger counters. So with that data, that will provide us with some great information to be able to predict where people are boarding, where they're getting off, where they're traveling to, the times of day. But I still believe that if we were just to build a grid-type system here, we would see moderate success. But that's coming, and that's going to need some investment. That's going to need some more buses. That's going to need some more drivers, and that's going to need council to invest in Guelph Transit.
I'll get to the other 99 question, and it was, again, this was pretty lengthy, but this person was disappointed that I gather they worked here at the university, and they work until midnight, and it take and unfortunately they walk a or they work a 12-minute walk away from the university center, and they note that the last 99 heading towards the Smart Center, which is what they would need, leaves at 12:10, and they probably can't make that one, which means they're going to be looking at some walking. I think what they're getting at is perhaps looking at expanding the hours, and I think this is a question a lot of people have, is when might Guelph Transit be looking at maybe running till 1 a.m. on, or even maybe 2 a.m., 3 a.m. on certain days on the weekend, even when we're talking about the late night bar scene.
And that is a priority for me and for our staff. We need to ensure that we're operating in the hours that people want us to and need us to. And currently, we probably could expand our service later in the evening, and we could start a little bit earlier in the morning. But weekend service right now is something that needs to be reviewed and looked at rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So the plan I would suggest, where we would be looking at a more dedicated approach to expanding our hours, would be the 2019 budget time.
Okay.
So, my plan is 2 to 5 years, but the priority will be to increase frequencies, to increase hours of service, and to increase the number of buses.
Okay. This one's kind of wonkish. This was submitted by, I think, a true transit nerd, but they were asking about the distance between some stops. They say that there are some stops that are sort of 200 meters apart, and that they were talking specifically on Gordon Street along the new 99 route. And they say this is kind of different from GRT, Grand River Transit, where stops seem to be between 700 and 900 meters apart. I can't confirm those numbers. I'm not sure where they got that info, but there was some concern on their part that maybe some of these routes can be quicker if the math on the length between stops was different. Can you talk a little bit about how that's calculated, or if the, or if that's going to be changing, or if there's going to be any sort of amendments to that in the future?
So our walking distance from mm-hmm. bus stop to bus stops is 500 meters.
Okay.
And that's a blanket right across the city. That's not something that we can continue to look at it from that perspective. We've got to look at how many bus stops do we have? Where are people getting on the buses? Where are they getting off the buses? How many stops do we need? And what is the walking distance between stops, or sorry, what is the walking distance to stops, and what is the bus traveling between stops? So that's a process we do need to go through, because there's different areas of the city where we will require more bus stops, and then there's other areas, especially along the Gordon Street corridor, where we may not need as much bus stops because we're trying to create that higher order of transit.
Right.
But we need to create the policy to understand where we need a bus stop, why we need a bus stop, do we need street furniture there, shelters, benches, etc. And that's going to be part of our growth strategy and our growth plan, because we won't be able to do that until we have some sort of policy and some sort of understanding of how that's going to work in the city. I had a discussion with a colleague a couple of days ago in regards to, well, if you have 10 bus stops on a length of bus stop, and people are only getting on five of them, that bus is only stopping five times.
Right.
But I said, but if you look at it from a five-day travel pattern, they may use all 10 of those stops on different times of the day. And that's now what you're doing is you're stopping your bus way too many times. So that's why the automatic passenger counters will give us that opportunity to understand where people are boarding, where they're getting off, and then how we can better design our routes and our bus stops so that the travel time of the buses can, and the schedule adherence can be improved all the time. I know it was a wordy answer, but it is something that we do need to look at, and that we need to come up with some sort of policy that makes sense. For example, if seniors need to go to medical centers or seniors' homes or residents or something like that, we've got to have bus stops a little shorter,
right,
or a little closer to those facilities than maybe we would somewhere on the Gordon Street corridor. So that's just not a great example, but hopefully it answers your question.
When we're talking about that data you're collecting, you know, what are we looking at in terms of the sample size? Is, you know, when you're making those changes, is it going to be a matter of weeks? Is it going to be a matter of looking at it for months, or might by a matter of quarters? Or
right now, we are looking at the data weekly.
Okay.
And come next week, we will be looking at it even closer. But I would suggest that on a monthly basis, we will be looking at our KPIs, mm-hmm. seeing how they measure up. And then I think the best way to describe how we're going to do this is all four seasons need to be part of this, because the traveling when the university is in is different. In the winter, right, we do have people that use the bus that maybe in the summertime or the springtime walk or cycle.
Mm.
So understanding the four season patterns of the entire city is something that I think we need to do, and we need to understand, and we need to make sure that we're measuring on a consistent basis.
Somebody asked on Reddit if the Transit Advisory Committee has been utilized in this process as well as they could have been. They seem to infer that the committee had a lot of ideas that they brought up early that have since come out in terms of feedback from the general public, and specific reference taking stops out of the square. And they particularly referenced the General Hospital bus, which now I believe goes up Woolwich instead of through the square. How was the Transit Advisory Committee engaged through this process?
The Transit Advisory Committee has been engaged.
Mm-hmm.
I probably think we can do much better with our engagement with that committee.
Mm-hmm.
But what we need to do is we need to make sure that we have those members engaged and committed to wanting to make a difference with Guelph Transit and understand their role and understand how they can make the experience much better for the passengers. So they represent a wide area of the ridership, and I think that we're just now starting to gain momentum in regards to how that committee can work. We've got a great chair, mm-hmm. who's very motivated. He's a very transit user who is very passionate about transit, so that's going to help. And the members are also passionate about this. So I think as we move into next year and we get this committee even more involved in things, we're putting in new fare collection systems. We're going to do a fare strategy. So all of that, the Transit Advisory Committee will be involved in, and their feedback will be invaluable. And like always, we can take the feedback and utilize some of it, and unfortunately, not all the time will we use that, but that is their avenue for them to be able to provide that feedback representing the community.
Okay, the last listener question I have is probably a little bit further in the future than that, but they're talking about the regional transit predicament, particularly buses to KW. Their question was, who would provide that service? And I guess this is a matter of sort of what's in the works. Would this be some sort of cooperation between GRT and Guelph Transit, or is this going to be something that maybe GO Transit is going to be involved in with Metrolinx?
Well, so yes to both, really.
Okay.
I think that is just something that we're going to look at. So we're going to work with our neighbors at GRT, and we're also going to look at our partners with Metrolinx and GO Transit and have that conversation and make sure that we do this right, mm-hmm. and we do it so that it doesn't just get shelved as a real good plan without any funding. So I think the opportunity right now is for us to build that. And with the investment that we're receiving from both levels of government and the fact that GO Transit is now providing better service to Guelph every day,
mm-hmm.
the next piece of that now is how people get to Guelph from Cambridge, from Kitchener, from Fergus, from the entire Wellington County. So I think that conversation will be happening very shortly, and it's very preliminary now, but I do know that the appetite for us to get together and have a conversation about what our next steps are has been very well received from both of those partners.
It seems like a good point to remind people that starting Tuesday, the GO bus is going to and from Square One hourly between Square One and Guelph. So that is going to be a huge change in terms of getting people to and from the GTA. Mike, if we're unfortunately running out of time, but if people, you know, come Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, have any thoughts, concerns, suggestions in terms of how the realignment is going and how maybe their area is being affected, how can people reach out to Transit?
Well, there's lots of ways to reach out, but I think, Adam, what I want to do is just mention that with any change, we're going to ask people to be a little bit patient as we work through this, because in some cases, change can happen better for some than others. And so there will be some points where we're going to need to kind of do some tweaks, but overall, if the system's not working, we want to hear about it. If they've got ideas about how we can make it better, then we want to hear from that as well. So people can send it in through email, they can send it in through Facebook, Twitter, or they can just give us a call and give our customer service line a call. And all of that is tracked, and we do monitor that on a monthly basis, the types of calls that we're getting. But we would love to hear from people. We've heard already from a huge number of people, some positive, some not so positive, but we're hearing from people, and we want to make Guelph Transit work for the city of Guelph. Mm-hmm. We want it to be a made in Guelph solution and not a system that is just going to be here and not listen to its customers. So we want to do a real good job of understanding how Guelph Transit needs to work in this community. And the only way we can do that is hearing from the people that actually use the system.
Well, Mike, we appreciate hearing from you today and joining us by phone, and good luck come Sunday. I hope you don't need it, but it's there anyway.
Appreciate that, Adam. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
And that was Mike Spicer. He's the GM of Guelph Transit, and the changes are coming on Sunday, September 3rd, and do consult. You can either consult my website, Guelph Politico. I did kind of a Coles Notes version of the changes, or you can certainly go to the Guelph Transit website to learn more. That is it for this week's edition of Open Sources. Mark McKinnon will be here next week, Ward 6 counselor, and then on September 14th, James Gordon, Ward 2 counselor, will be in studio with me. Unfortunately, Scotty Hertz will be on vacation.
I got a thing, yeah.
He's joining Ivanka and Jared in Whistler. Maybe.
I don't know. Like that golf course in Aberdeen, but I won't give away too much. But yeah, big plans.
Anyway, open source is Guelph.com. Open source is Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And once again, you can find this and other episodes of Open Sources on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean. And you could subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to GuelphPolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. I blog at a place called The Spanner Book. Might not be anything there for a little bit. But also, I'm playing the Labor Day Picnic on Monday. If you want to come out, have a hot dog. If I play one thing a year, it's always that. I always get the call up. And I'm always glad to do it. So.
Yeah.
Somebody got to preserve them old-timey songs, eh? You know?
There you go.
So
I'm glad you remembered that and promoted that. So, yeah, stay tuned for Dizzy J. Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour. It is a rerun, I know, because we were asked to run a rerun of DJ Sounds Good to Me. But I think she'll be back here in person probably next week.
The flood comes next week.
Absolutely.
The deluge.
Absolutely. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca. Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and I will be back here next week for
Superstar.
More Open Sources. Thursday at 5 p.m. See you then.